Rookie Privateer. Written by Jamie McFarlane. Narrated by Michael Naramore. Chapter 1. Tag. Dock control, I said to the ship's always listening artificial intelligence, AI. A virtual T-handled lever emerged from the translucent blue panel next to my left hand, and I gave it a forward flick. A small chirp indicated the lever had reached its destination. Subtle vibrations reinforced the assumption that station clamps had released my oar sled, but a pulsing red triangle showed on the panel. Frack. I swiped my hand impatiently and waited. The panel continued to pulse red even after I felt the clamps reengage. Show failure, I instructed tersely. One of the two large vid screens in front of me displayed a single spindly leg of the oar sled. A slight bow in the leg pulsed with a red outline, indicating the point of failure. It was bent just enough to prevent the station's clamp from either releasing or reengaging. Vent Atmo, open cockpit. The smudge of my irritated breath rapidly disappeared from the clear faceplate as the AI puffed dry air across it. I dismissed the display of the oar sled's leg with a sweep of my hand, and the screens darkened. Small plumes of expanding vapor billowed out of the numerous ports below the cockpit. Once the plumes lost their intensity, a well-hidden door levered up like a bat wing from the canopy. The minimal gravity of the station beckoned me slowly downward. I fired the suit's arc jets and rushed toward the bent leg 10 meters back. I communicated navigation commands to my AI through a nearly infinite series of micro-gestures. The AI, in turn, caused the bright blue cones of arc jet propulsion to fire appropriately. My movements came easily. I've been navigating an arc jet suit since I could eat solid food and took the skill for granted. I pushed away from the sled to get a clean view of the problem leg. My AI projected a pulsing red outline directly onto the retina of my eye, highlighting the bend. A quick inspection showed that the leg and the station's clamp had engaged in such a way that the simple linear movement of the clamp couldn't overcome. The leg of the sled had an incredible amount of vertical strength, but were spindly and prone to a bit of bowing when too much horizontal force occurred. My landing had probably been a little sloppy, but it wasn't a difficult fix. I strategically placed the top of my boot against the leg of the oar sled and fired the arc jet in short, strong bursts from the heel. I felt a shudder through my gloves as the metallic alloys in the sled's leg slipped back into the correct position. I pushed back a couple meters and called out, "Dock control!" A familiar display lit up, and I flicked a lever to release the clamps. This time, the panel pulsed a pleasant green, and the clamps indeed receded beneath the floor with a satisfying thunk. The sled wasn't connected to anything now, but the low gravity of the station was sufficient to keep it in place. From the corner of my eye, I caught the movement of a small runabout lifting off from the station about 300 meters away. The craft belonged to Tabitha Masters, and I chortled quietly at my good luck. There was no time to waste, and I leaned over and engaged the arc jets, quickly slithering to the front of the sled and into the cockpit. "Close cockpit! Engines online! Throttle control!" I spat, while scrambling to pull the restraining harness over my suit and buckle it between my legs as atmosphere flooded the cabin. My clear faceplate retracted upward into the helmet when the pressure equalized and I worked my jaw, making my ears pop. "Craft tracking!" A new display popped up with flight controls and subtle icons next to the many different moving objects. It took a moment to orient on Tabby. I jabbed my finger through her craft's floating icon, and a green ring encircled the runabout. A reverse pinch motion caused the icon to enlarge, showing her craft's attitude and bearing. Virtual arrows indicated velocity and acceleration relative to my own. Without looking, I grabbed the flight joystick with my right hand and, with my left, jammed throttle controls forward. Tabitha Masters' runabout had a strong lead on me, so I pushed the sled's thrusters into the red. Since I had a good idea where Tabby was headed, I knew better than to fly directly at her. She was too crafty for that, and her AI would warn her if it picked up on my approach. I directed my sled toward the backside of the large asteroids between me and the colony's habitation complex. It was out of the way, but I'd avoid her visual range and could accelerate hard without gaining unwanted attention. Rounding the asteroid, a new, small green oval appeared on the cockpit's canopy. I knew immediately whose small craft it was. "Open comm channel, Nick James," I instructed. Before I could say anything, the quick, high-pitched cadence of my best friend interrupted. "Burning it pretty hard, aren't you?" "I'm on Tabby 6 and don't think she has me yet. I'm going for a point." Nick's only response was a sigh, but he adjusted to fall in behind me. He might not approve, but would ride along just the same. I rocked the sled back and forth, dodging rock outcroppings as I hugged the asteroid, hiding me from my quarry. The thrusters of the sled weren't overly sensitive, so in order to achieve the complex maneuvers, I had to change the orientation of the arc jets along the length of the sled by rotating the entire sled and firing the right jets at the right time. It was complicated, but I was born for this. My sled cleared the asteroid, and my heart hammered loudly in my ears when Tabby's sled slid into view. She was still on the same vector as when I lost visual, and I pushed the sled even harder on an intercept course. A warning chirped in my ears as the AI anticipated a collision.
"Frack! Hoffman? Seriously?"
Tabby's startled face appeared in the upper left of my display.
"Tag! Point Hoffman!" I yelled in victory.
My sled bumped the side of Tabby's runabout hard enough to jolt both of us, but I fired the bottom thrusters, causing me to roll away gently.
"Dumbass!"
Tabby exclaimed, struggling to level out her own flight. Then her craft rotated abruptly, pointing directly at me. I chuckled into the calm and aimed my sled toward another large asteroid, 20 seconds away on a hard burn. Tabby's runabout was quicker, and she was a good pilot. But I chose this particular course because I knew the asteroid had a tunnel running through its center. If I could keep her from tagging me until we got there, I'd lose her. It was risky, but it would be epic if I pulled it off. Tabby's approach was hotter than I anticipated, and her ship quickly closed the distance. Upon reaching the asteroid, I dropped in close to hug the surface. Tabby closed to 25 meters, but I'd made it to the asteroid and didn't think she would see this move coming. At less than 5 meters away, she was triumphant.
"I own you, punk!"
"Too late," I said. I pushed the joystick and throttle forward at the same time, and then pulled the joystick back a second later, leaving the throttle wide open. The shoulder straps dug in as the pressure of my own momentum tried to eject me. The nose of the sled pitched about 75 degrees down, pointing into an opening in the asteroid. I forced the top thrusters wide open, and they whined while pushing against the big rock opening. Without the rock wall to thrust against, I couldn't possibly have made the turn, and I basked in the moment of my brilliant maneuver. My forward momentum bled off quickly, and I shot into the tunnel. Even with the jets at 120% on the top, I was going to end up closer to the wall of the tunnel than I'd like, but it was working just as I had pictured in my mind. A microsecond later, I was jarred from my reverie by a three-dimensional display of my ore sled jumping to the forefront of my display, bright flashing red on the bottom aft section of the hull. The intensity of the red indicated an imminent collision underneath the craft. It didn't make sense. I'd made it. What was the AI seeing? The AI's prediction was spot on as the sled crashed into the wall of the cavern.
"Frack me!"
was all I could grunt. The air pushed out of my lungs, and I felt and heard the screeching crash of metal on metal behind me. The top side of the sled lit up in my visor's display as a dark crimson, yet nowhere near as bright as the aft collision. Then I caught a glimpse of the aft's camera view. Tabby's runabout cartwheeling past the opening of the tunnel as it reacted to a collision. Tabby had run into the bottom of my sled, and in turn sent it careening into the cavern's wall. The all-seeing AI had put it together, but not in time to do anything but warn me.
"Jerkbait! Point masters!
Tabby yelled. I didn't have time to respond. A split second later, I slammed into the tunnel wall, bringing my relative speed directly into line with the asteroid. The sled slid along for 200 meters while I worked frantically to stop its forward progress. If there was critical damage, I didn't want to shoot out the other side of the asteroid.
Frack, Tab, you could have killed him! What the frack?
Nick demanded. It was a good sign that I could hear his voice. I checked the visor's display for signs of atmo leaks in both the cockpit and my vac suit. The cockpit's integrity was definitely blown. There was virtually no remaining atmosphere, but my faceplate had slid down upon impact, and my suit's readouts were all green.
Frack off, Nick! How was I supposed to know he was going to pull that stupid move?
Tabitha's voice was husky with adrenaline. My sled finally stopped and rolled onto one side. Sliding my finger along an interior panel, I found the button to manually release the cockpit. The remaining puffs of compressed nitrogen and oxygen escaped through small ports below the transparent shield of the cockpit's canopy and expanded into the vacuum of space. I was grateful the cockpit door had opened successfully.
Liam, you okay?
Nick's voice cut through my concentration.
Yeah, I think so, but I really messed up the sled. Dad's gonna be pissed.
The asteroid wasn't large enough to have noticeable gravity, so I didn't have any trouble pulling myself out of the cockpit. I oriented myself to inspect the sled's topside. The cockpit was connected to a 7-meter square hull that extended 20 meters back. Directional thrusters were just behind the cockpit, 10 meters back and at the stern. A large matter reactor engine, located a few meters behind me, provided the massive thrust required to move the many tons of ore the sled was designed to haul. Bright lights swept across the wrecked sled as Nick's smaller vehicle approached.
How bad?
His voice was noticeably less intense. He eased his craft into a position about 20 meters above the wreck, providing maximum light.
Can't be good. It was a hard hit. The cockpit isn't holding atmo.
Small puffs of vapor escaped as Nick depressurized the cabin of his passenger vehicle. Before he could exit, however, Tabitha's runabout pulled up to the crash site with lights blazing.
Kay, let me look.
Thrusters on Nick's suit fired small blue cones, and he zipped over to the wreck. A second taller person exited Nick's vehicle, and the bright red hair of his younger brother Jack showed through his visor. Nick bumped my shoulder slightly with his own as he joined me in surveying the damage on top of the sled.
You pretty much obliterated the top thrusters, he said.
Nick leaned in and pulled a couple of twisted panels off, laying them to the side. A couple of moments later, he turned back to me.
I hate to say it, but you were doomed either way. These guys are burned through. How much matter did you run through them?
160 at the end, I said, as straight as I could manage.
That's crazy. You know that's a percent, right? As in 100 is the max, not just a number?
Nick's voice was calm and unperturbed. This wasn't our first time through this conversation.
How did you get them to 160? I thought they cut out at 110 or so.
Another figure stepped in front of the lights. Even after everything that had just happened, it was hard not to be distracted by the shape of my other best friend, Tabitha Masters. Over the last couple of years, she had gone from being just another one of us to causing me a great deal of confusion. She approached with a wide grin on her face.
I guess that's my point then,
and punctuated her words by slapping the top of my helmet. The slap pulled me from the stupor she sometimes caused in me, and the excitement of the moment returned.
Frack, you didn't have to wreck me. Learn to fly, dumbass. You hit the brakes when I was only 2 meters back. You're lucky all I did was tag you.
Tabitha gave me a hard look and thrust her hands onto her hips. I tried to return the look, but found it impossible to muster. Soon, all four of us were laughing like hyenas.
Well, crap. I guess this thing isn't going anywhere.
I swept my hand grandly over my now ruined ship.
Let's get it after school. I have a couple of drop-offs, and we can swing by and bring it back to the shop. Hop in,
Nick said.
Yeah, I don't need Mom being mad at me for not showing up for school. Dad's already gonna be all over my case,
I agreed. Jack climbed into the vehicle first, grabbing two of the front seats in the six-person cabin.
Don't even think about it.
Nick stared his brother down, floating across the outside top of the canopy in a slow, cartwheeling arc. Jack sighed and shuffled back to the middle row of seats. Moments later, Nick and I both loaded into the powder blue passenger vehicle.